Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there, students. This is Mary Purdy coming to you from an audio called Blog Talk Radio. This is a chance for me to give an audio version of my PowerPoint, which was having some technical difficulties, so I hope you can follow along with the PowerPoint to this audio. The title of the PowerPoint is Nutrition and Obesity, a Multifaceted Issue. And essentially, you have some wonderful resources on the Moodle, articles and statistics and videos and facts, all different kinds of evidence around the obesity issue. And what I wanted to do today with this PowerPoint is to essentially give you a perspective from a clinician who's a nutritionist around how we might dictate recommendations or offer advice and guidance and recommendations to somebody who is dealing with cravings and overeating and subsequently has been dealing with obesity or a weight gain that they feel like is problematic for them. So this is not really about offering diet advice as much as it is around exploring what might be going on for them that's causing the overeating. We won't be able to get to everything today, but I'll at least give you a brief overview of some of the recommendations that I tend to offer my patients, and hopefully this will be helpful for you as you continue your education and start as a practitioner. So we are on slide number one right now, and we're going to move on to the next slide, and that is how I will preface each switching of the slide, as I will say, next slide. So next slide. Obesity is not just about a lack of willpower. Many people feel that that's what it is. They are not able to exert any self-control. They are lazy. They're not able to make changes, or they're not motivated. But it is really so much more of a complex issue than that. Next slide. We've got stress, emotions. People are quitting smoking, and that causes a lot of cravings. If people are dealing with a lack of sleep or excessive fatigue, this can have a huge connection to and impact on what we choose to eat and how our dietary patterns emerge. Next slide. So all of those things, the stress, the emotions, can lead to more mood swings and cravings and overeating as a result, and taste changes. If someone has quit smoking, that very often can lead to a change in the palate and taste buds, which can cause overeating and cravings and weight gain. And next slide. Did I mention more cravings? Yes, I hear about cravings all the time from my patients. And this is something that I think is a huge issue for people. They feel addicted to food. They feel like they have cravings that they don't understand and they're struggling with, and they feel a slave to their cravings. So we really try and break those cravings down. And when we have cravings, next slide, what do? Well, we very often go for the quick and easy bursts of energy. The coffee, the caffeine, the cookies, the cakes, the chips, the quick refined sugar treats that very often give us that burst of something that people are looking for. Next slide. So think about your own cravings. What do you crave, or what have you craved in the past? Think about what might have been an issue for you and why. Next slide. So cravings are natural. They're very common human experience. And this is because many foods stimulate that reward center of the brain. We often go to food for comfort. We often have very positive associations with food, so it's very easy to understand why someone might eat certain foods or crave certain foods because they have a very specific association with that food. Additionally, there are habitual issues that come up around cravings and foods, just by virtue of the fact that people are used to eating a certain food every day, or when they feel sad, or when they feel bored. And low energy is also going to cause cravings as well. We tend to crave things when we feel like we don't have enough energy, so we go for something that we feel like will give us that energy, or that has given us energy in the past. And then poor sleep. So if people are not sleeping well, their body very often tries to make up for that deficit in energy by craving more food. Next slide. And when it comes to cravings, I very often hear about carbohydrates being the central craving experience, and very often it is sweets. Of course, there's the salty, there's the chips as well, but in general, I hear a lot about sugar cravings. Next slide. So sugar is energy, and it gives us that immediate burst. And generally, the cravings come in the simple and refined carbohydrate world. So the white rices, the pastas, the breads, the chips, the white flour goods, baked goods, candies, cookies, things like that. And all of these things do give an immediate boost to our energy. But next slide. There's an impact of refined carbs on our health. We know that they can raise our blood sugar, cause the body to overproduce our insulin. Our immune system can be compromised as a result of this. We actually are depleting our energy, giving us a false sense of energy. And very often when people are over-consuming refined carbohydrates, they really lose their ability to focus properly, to have a good sense of concentration. Next slide. Additionally, when we eat foods that are devoid of nutritional value, we call these empty calories, our body doesn't really get the sense that it's been satiated or nourished. So we tend to eat more because we simply are looking for more vitamins and minerals. So eating foods that have no nutritional value can essentially lead to more cravings. Additionally, refined carbohydrates, if we're particularly sedentary, we aren't necessarily using up that glucose, and this can lead to additional weight gain because they're getting stored as fat, and also elevated triglycerides. And high fructose corn syrup, which is a common ingredient in many foods that are in the processed food world, is also fairly detrimental to our health and can interfere with our feelings of satiety and hunger. It can actually interfere with leptin. So eating all of these refined carbohydrates usually leads to, next slide, more cravings, usually sweets, very often, you know, some kind of refined carbohydrate. So the cycle continues. Next slide. I get this question a lot. Are carbs healthy? Well, they definitely can be. Many contain those vitamins and minerals that you've been learning about. And a lot of carbs contain antioxidants. And we're looking for those ones that contain fiber. Complexity. Fiber helps with lowering cholesterol, it keeps our blood sugar more managed, and because it digests more slowly in our systems, it keeps us fuller longer. So when we are fuller longer, we tend to eat less food and have a little bit of a healthier weight. And our energy is more sustained. We're getting more sustained amounts of fiber-rich, nutrient-dense carbohydrates that give us a little bit more of a longer boost. Next slide. So we know that not all carbs are equal. So when we talk about recommending carbs, the focus we want to be on the complex carbohydrates, the brown rices, the whole grains, or maybe it's vegetables like squashes and sweet potatoes. Beans obviously offer some carbohydrates in the complex category as well. It's going to be based on the individual preference and cooking capabilities of that person. And simple refined carbohydrates in the white flour and sugar category simply don't offer us much nutritional value and very often can deplete our system. Next slide. So how do we prevent or reduce cravings? This is a great question. Next slide. Balance. Balance is key. And what does this mean? Well, let's talk a little bit about how do we create balance in our diet and on our plate. Next slide. Let's talk about protein. So why do we need protein? You have been studying this for a while now, so you probably have a good sense of why protein is essential to our bodies. Next slide. So we need to include it at each meal. It builds our skin, our hair, our nails, our muscles. It helps with our immune system. If we're dealing with any kind of sickness or wound, it helps to repair our body. And as it relates to cravings, protein really helps to balance the blood sugar. So it absolutely is essential to include it at a meal because very often if we just have a carbohydrate, we aren't getting that balanced blood sugar. It slows down digestion and helps to make us feel somewhat more satiated. So if we don't have that protein, particularly at a breakfast, you're almost guaranteed to crave carbs because what essentially happens is the body, if it doesn't feel like it has enough energy, is going to start craving the very thing that is going to give it the most amount of energy with the least amount of effort, and that is almost always those carbohydrates. So protein really helps to stem that experience. Next slide. In terms of protein sources, obviously there are differences. There's animal sources and there's plant sources. I don't tend to recommend one over the other for every single person. I really try and work with that person's individuality. But we know that there are some differences in terms of the makeup of amino acids there. And plant sources tend to have more fiber, are pretty much they are the source of fiber because animal sources have no fiber. And they also have plant chemicals, phytochemicals that offer additional amounts of nutritional value. And animal sources, depending on the type of animal and the diet of that animal, will often have healthy fats as well. And we'll get a little bit more into that. So if an animal has been grass-fed, for instance, let's say a cow, the nutritional value of that cow's meat is going to be very different from an animal that has been fed cornmeal or soybean, simply because of the makeup of that of that food and the nutritional value and the impact that it has on the meat of that animal. Next slide. So how much protein do we need? We talked a little bit about this in class. It's going to depend on someone's activity level and how much they weigh and what else might be going on for them medically. But essentially, we're looking for about 15 to 20 grams per meal and maybe about 5 to 10 grams per snack. We want to be careful about how much protein, depending on what's going on with that person, because too much can also be harmful. So we're looking for a nice balance of protein. Next slide. And protein can add up fairly quickly. We had this information in our lecture last week, but around 2 eggs equals 14 grams, depending on the size of the egg, and a cup of beans or lentils is anywhere between 15 to 18, depending on the bean. Fourth of a cup of nuts, somewhere in that 4 to 7 grams, again, depending on that nut or that seed. 3 ounces of meat equals around 21 grams. 3 ounces of tofu, a little bit less than that, 10 grams. And a cup of edamame is more like 15 grams. And if you're somebody who enjoys tempeh, that is about 21 grams for 4 ounces of tempeh. Next slide. In terms of portion sizes, when it comes to meat, I tend to recommend around that 3 ounces, maybe 4 ounces of cooked meat, fish, or poultry equals about the size of a deck of cards or maybe the size of the palm of your hand. And that, in general, is usually a sufficient amount, 21 to 28 grams of protein. But again, it's going to be dependent on what that person's needs are. Next slide. One important thing to take into consideration is that we know that the studies have shown that excessive amounts of red meat is associated with heart disease and cancer. So I tend to recommend people keeping their portions to around 11 to 15 ounces per week and to focus on more high-quality meats, so bison burger, lamb, making sure it's organic or grass-fed. Now, many of these studies that were done were not necessarily differentiating between grass-fed animals and factory-farmed animals. So there may be some discrepancies there in terms of the exact amount of health issues that may be indicated. Next slide. So we talked about protein. Let's continue our discussion around how to prevent or reduce cravings and creating balance on that plate. Let's talk about fat. Next slide. So why are fats essential to every diet? I think you all know a lot about this already, but let's talk a little bit more as it relates to a recommendation perspective. Next slide. So we know fat has wonderful functions in the body. It protects our organs. It provides a source of energy for us. It helps with absorption of our fat-soluble vitamins. And yes, it provides flavor and enjoyment to food, thank goodness. It helps us feel full, helps us feel satiated, and because it slows down digestion, that really helps to stabilize our blood sugar. Next slide. I tend to try to not talk about food in terms of good or bad, but we hear this a lot, good fats versus bad fats. We know that fats make up every single outer layer of every single cell in our body, and they comprise 60% of our brain. So is it important which ones we eat? I think you know the answer. Yes, it is. Next slide. We talk a lot about essential fatty acids, those omega-3s and omega-6s, which we find in things like fish, fish oil, all different kinds of nuts, all different kinds of seeds. These are essential, meaning that we cannot actually produce them, so we need to get them from our diet. Next slide. So in terms of putting a spotlight on omega-3s, we know how vital these are to our health. They're helpful for our immune system, our brains. They reduce our bad cholesterol. They lower our blood pressure. They help lower our triglycerides and support our heart. They help with preventing stroke and all different kinds of inflammatory conditions, whether that's an arthritis type of inflammatory condition or something that's more systemic as well. Next slide. So the critical piece is that while omega-6s and omega-3s are both essential, they really need to be in the proper ratio. So omega-6s tend to be more inflammatory, while omega-3s tend to be more anti-inflammatory. And we're looking to make sure that that ratio is balanced, that it's somewhere between that 2 omega-6s or 4 omega-6s to 1 omega-3. But right now, the ratio is very, very warped, the American diet. So it's more like 20 to 1 omega-6s to omega-3s. And that can lead to more inflammatory pathways being generated, and that can lead to all the different kinds of chronic issues that we're seeing a lot of. So the reason that we're seeing a lot of that is because omega-6s are in so many different processed foods, in the oil form, the corn oils, the soybean oils, safflower oils, and a lot of restaurants that people are going out to are also cooking with these oils because they tend to be cheap. They are often very refined, they're bleached, they're chemicalized, and when they are fried or baked, they actually can become trans fatty acids. So we really try to recommend to patients to look at their ingredients to make sure that they're not getting such a huge excess of this, because this can have a huge impact on the amount of calories that they're having coming from fats that simply don't offer any nutritional benefits. Next slide. Other fats that I love highlighting are the ones that we know are implicated in the healthy Mediterranean diet, like olives and avocados and olive oil. These are wonderfully healthy for the brain, for the heart, and we've seen some great studies that show that the Mediterranean diet can help with preventing Alzheimer's disease and having many other positive benefits. Next slide. Oh, so encouraging folks to get those fats in there is really helpful. Saturated fats. We're learning now with the research that saturated fats don't have as many detrimental effects as was once thought, and they actually are a necessary part of the diet. We do need them as part of our fat intake. They mostly come from animal products, but they are in some plant foods. And too much saturated fat, yes, it can increase blood cholesterol levels, but it can increase the good and the bad. So is that necessarily an issue? Well, who knows? It also is very dependent upon the diet of that animal. So once again, if that animal is consuming grass or is consuming, as a chicken, maybe grubs and seeds and bits of vegetable, the content of their meat or their eggs, in the chicken's case, is going to be very, very different from an animal that's consuming a highly refined and high in those inflammatory omega-6s like cornmeal or soybean meal, things like that. So moderate amounts of saturated fat, I think, are actually very essential. Coconut is also a saturated fat, but it's a little bit of an exception in terms of the form in which those fats come. They come in that medium chain triglyceride form, which are used differently by your body. So many people talk about how coconut oils and fats can help boost your metabolism. The lauric acid in there can help with antibacterial properties and offers antifungal properties as well. Coconut tastes pretty good and can help with those sweet cravings as well. Next slide. So in terms of the bad fats, and these are the truly bad fats that offer very little and practically nothing as it relates to our health, these are our trans fats, often hidden in ingredients called partially hydrogenated oils. So we know these are not readily used by the body. The body does not know how to deal with the structure that trans fats are in, and they can really have a detrimental effect in our arteries and our brains, everything. They increase our bad cholesterol. They lower our good cholesterol. They contribute to inflammatory conditions like arthritis. Next slide. Studies have shown they've contribute to insulin resistance. They raise our triglycerides. They don't do much for our immunity. And we still are seeing them quite prevalent in the food supply, in certain margarines, in certain processed foods. They're still there. And you really have to read the ingredients sometimes as well to make sure that your food is absolutely free of these. Next slide. So how much fat does somebody need a day? Well, this is just a general overview of someone maybe working with 2,000 calories. Around that 25 to 30% of those calories should come from fat. So if you're working with someone who is on a fat-free diet or eating lots and lots of fat-free foods, chances are they are going to be dealing with lots and lots of cravings, and either craving carbs or craving fat, and then overdoing it later on. So making sure that person has sufficient amount of fat in their diet can be really wonderful for helping to curb some of those overeating tendencies. So this just gives you a general sense. If around 30% comes from fat, that's about 600 calories, 9 calories in 1 gram, so that equals around 66 grams per day, which can be, you know, 15 to 20 per meal, 5 to 10 per snack, depending on that person. Next slide. So what else helps with cravings? We've talked about fat, we've talked about fiber, we've talked about protein and getting those in at every meal. Well, natural sweetness can be a wonderful boon to the body. Next slide. Fruits and vegetables offer this wonderful natural sweetness. We're looking for color, color, color. They are wonderfully nourishing and nurturing to the body. They provide tons of vitamins and minerals. We've got wonderful batches of antioxidants that they provide as well, which protect the body from disease. They support our immune system. We've got our beautiful fiber in our fruits and vegetables. And if they're raw, they're having lots of wonderful enzymes that help with digestion. Some of those enzymes will be denatured when they get cooked, but there's still a little bit in there. And these have natural sweetness. So if someone's got a real sweet tooth, sometimes the fruits and vegetables can help. Additionally, what do plants do all day? They hang out in the sun and they photosynthesize and they generate energy. So when we eat plants, when we eat fruits and vegetables, what do we have? We have energy. So if you're working with someone who is depleted and feels like they have no energy, it's really great to take a look at their diet and see how many fruits and vegetables they have. And that may be a great place to begin to at least add in more of those so that their energy is somewhat elevated. Next slide. We really try and shoot for eating the rainbow, so trying to get as many different colors and shapes and sizes and flavors of different fruits and vegetables in there. We're shooting for that 9 to 13 servings a day, but hey, I will take as many as I can get from somebody. If they're having one, then let's move up to two, and we're doubling their amount. But essentially, if we can get more in, the more the better. And this is just some serving sizes that you can see as it relates to trying to recommend how much people can have. And I try to say every time you're eating, whether it's a snack or whether it's a meal, just make sure there's a fruit or a vegetable every time you're actually eating something. There should be color on the plate or color in your hand. Next slide. Fruits, just due to their natural sweetness, really can help with cravings. And variety is key here, whether it's dried fruit, frozen fruit, fresh fruit, or baked fruit. Those different flavors and those different cooking processes can have a real impact on the flavor of that food. So I loved trying with people, adding in something to their diet that maybe they haven't tried before, like a frozen banana, dipping that in nut butter, especially if this is someone who loves ice cream, or berries with yogurt and a drizzle of maple syrup, or making a fruit and nut bar so they feel like they're having some kind of a cookie experience. Usually, I tend to recommend pairing that fruit with a fat or a protein because it makes it more satiating. Just having an apple doesn't usually cut that or curb that craving as much as an apple with a piece of cheese or an apple smeared with a little bit of almond butter on it. Makes a big difference. And surprisingly, vegetables help with cravings as well. Yes, people are often surprised by this. There are many, many sweet vegetables out there. Squashes and sweet potatoes and beets and carrots and onions. And in particular, if these foods get cooked with wonderful sweet spices like nutmeg and cardamom and cinnamon, that can have a really big impact as well on helping to curb cravings because people feel like they're having a sweet experience. And conversely, bitter vegetables actually help to cut cravings as well. So having a radish or leafy greens, arugula, watercress, dandelion, things that kind of titillate your tongue in a different direction can often help with reducing cravings. So making these kinds of recommendations to patients as well. It's not about just saying you can't have this and you can't have that, but it's more about saying, hey, here are some new things for you to try. Here are some new things for your palate. Next slide. Speaking of new things, new flavors really help with cravings. If we are eating the same things over and over again, our bodies tend to crave the same things over and over again. So when we help patients to work with new flavors, that really can help to redirect their palate. And so herbs and spices are wonderful for doing this. And these are things that you can add to almost anything. You know, throwing herbs and spices on salads, putting things into a smoothie. Basil and blueberry smoothie is absolutely fantastic. Or cinnamon in a smoothie is terrific. Or sprinkling some of these things on top of vegetables, baking them, whatever the case may be. But the more flavor we can get into our patients' diets, the more likely we are to help them shift their palate. Next slide. Plus, the added benefit is that herbs and spices come with more than just flavor. They've got anti-inflammatory properties. They've got antioxidants. They help to stimulate digestion. The green ones contain chlorophyll, which is rich in magnesium. So they have additional energizing and immune-boosting properties. Next slide. And just having new flavors, whether it comes from herbs or spices or all the different wonderful condiments that are out there. I love recommending to patients, try a different vinegar. If you're always cooking with olive oil, cook with sesame oil or coconut oil. If you're making a salad dressing or always buying the same salad dressing, then try a salad dressing with a new mustard. Add garlic, onions, ginger into dishes for new flavors. And nice peppers, nice spicy peppers are a wonderful thing to recommend because they have some metabolism-boosting properties. But also, I like to say, hey, when your mouth's on fire, it's pretty tough to have seconds and thirds. So it can often temper the appetite as well. And then zests and extracts are wonderful things to add into foods as well, whether that's a muffin or a salad, adding some lemon zest to that those kinds of flavors are terrific. Next slide. New foods and drinks in general. We talked about all different kinds of flavors. I always recommend when someone goes to the store, try something you've never tried before. Hopefully it's not a packaged food. It's something different, like an interesting-looking vegetable or a new kind of grain or a nut or something like that, or a new kind of tea. Or trying new drinks like coconut water or kombucha, coconut milks, shopping at farmers markets, just trying new flavors and getting out of the rut of that people often have with their food. Next slide. So there's this concept of excess calories equals weight gain, and we know right now that 1 in 3 Americans are overweight, which potentially can increase the risk of many diseases, although that's debatable depending on what's going on with that person's health and metabolism. But what we do know is while not all calories are equal, when we recommend foods that are nutrient-dense, we're almost always guaranteed to fill that person up more readily than having the same amount of calories in foods that are not nutrient-dense. So very often, someone might need 1,500 calories, but if they're getting those calories from really nutrient-dense foods, they may actually be full after 1,300 calories, and that can often lead to weight loss that in a healthy way as well. Next slide. So in terms of creating that healthy plate, and I think you saw this in my lecture last week as well, we're looking for half of those foods that someone consumes to be in that bright, beautiful fruit and vegetable category, and a quarter of that plate to be some kind of protein, whether that's an animal or plant-based protein, another quarter of that plate to be coming from some kind of complex carbohydrate, and that might be a grain, that might be a vegetable. It might also fall into the same category of the protein with the beans, and then some kind of healthy fat. This really helps to keep balance. Water is also very, very important with cravings. Next slide. Energy drinks, I think I'm running out of time here, are not really energy. They're loaded with caffeine and sugar and have an impact on our blood pressure. Next slide. So these are a few ideas around how to boost your energy. I'm going to go through these real quick. Eating breakfast is essential. Adding toasted nuts and seeds, adding fruit to the day, and you can look over these more in depth. Getting in greens more often is a great way to boost energy. Same thing with adding water in. Adding beans to provide fiber, protein, and all different kinds of nutrition. Experimenting with herbs and spices. And snacking healthy. Using natural sweetness. Oh, these are all, these slides have been kind of going back and forth. So natural sweetness, dates and figs and coconut shreds and all different kinds of fun flavors that are naturally sweet. And next slide. Get the picture? So when we have fiber, fat, protein, healthy carbs, and water, people usually feel a lot better. Next slide. There are many other factors, emotions and stress, have a huge impact on our eating choices. Genetics, probiotics. When we have good gut flora, that really helps. When we don't burn calories as well. And metabolism and our thyroid function also play a role. So this is a short version of a very large subject, but I hope it was helpful for you all. And take care. If you have questions, please let me know.